Radio. It's time for the Daily Service, led by Pastor Alex Robertson. You're listening to Radio 4 FM, where it's time for our Book of the Week. The internationally renowned tenor Ian Bostridge explores Schubert's song cycle masterpiece, Winter Journey, which was inspired by the poems of Wilhelm Müller. It depicts a man wandering through a snowy landscape, away from his lost love, searching for meaning to his lonely existence. In this episode, we reach the midpoint of the cycle and open with Song 12, Einsamkeit.
Schubert came upon 12 of Wilhelm Müller's Die Winterreise poems sometime in the mid-1820s and composed them straight through as a 12-song cycle. Einsamkeit, loneliness, was the conclusion to Schubert's original cycle. It is a low point. Tiredness takes over, and the slow quavers in the piano drag with their mournful sonority of bare, open fifths. These don't recur in the cycle until the end of part two, and the hurdy-gurdy man's appearance on the scene. They were always, it would seem, part of the composer's conception of how to end his cycle, 12 songs, or 24, with a musical gesture which sounds hollow or empty. When Müller finally published his complete 24-poem version, he reordered the sequence so that effectively the new poems were interpolated among the old. Schubert was seized by the possibilities of the new poems, but he left the first 12 songs as they were and made them the first half of his cycle. He then took the extra poems and set them in the order that they occurred in Müller's book. One might say higgledy-piggledy. What is undeniable is that after Einsamkeit, the next song, Die Post, the post, feels like a new beginning, as indeed it is. The low mood of Einsamkeit is lifted by what can be imagined as revolving carriage wheels and a punchy post-horn call in the piano. The horn call is a familiar feature of the romantic imagination. The musicologist Charles Rosen cites a sonorous line from a poem roughly contemporaneous with Winterreise, Alfred de Vigny's Le Corps of 1826. J'aime le son du corps le soir au fond des bois. I love the sound of the horn in the evening from the depths of the wood. Vigny's evocation of the distant airs of a melancholy and tender horn is a poetic embodiment of a trend in German Romanticism which blended the aesthetic, the antiquarian, and the philosophical. The very fragility of sound, its onset, its resonance, its decay, somehow even before musical organisation has embraced it, connect the human sensorium to the mystery of time. Jean Paul, arch-romantic novelist, puts this to use in his stories. The distant bells of the village were recalling, like beautiful dying away times, over into the dark shouting of the shepherds in the fields. The horn, similarly, carries, etiolated, over long distances. The meanings it has accumulated, and continued to accumulate over the course of the 19th and into the 20th century, give it a remarkable capacity to evoke distance, absence, and regret. The historical connotations are telling too. Hunting horns evoke the past, a feudal past, the world we have lost. They smell of violence and masculinity, but they also summon up an idealised past, with the Waldhorn, the valveless hunting horn, sounding from the depths of the immemorial German forest, source of German myth, of German values, and almost, one might say, of German nationhood. The horn that sounds in Die Post may remind us of horns gone by, of romantic myth. In itself, it has a quite different character, one which is busy, urgent and excitable, present and not distant. These are the calls so familiar to the early 19th century traveller, signalling arrival or departure at the post station, or simply warning pedestrians on the road to watch out. Schubert's wanderer is confronted by a resonant, sounding image of modernity, the busy world to which he does not belong. Conventional wisdom would have it that it was the coming of the railways that revolutionised communications in the 19th century, annihilating time and space. Speedy and reliable transport links shrank the world. It was the railway, with its speed and use of timetables, that gradually imposed a universal standard of time on the world, a process only accelerated by the advent of the telegraph, the telephone, radio and television. The spectacular, glamorous advance that the railway represented makes it easy to forget that the mail coach came first. In purely mathematical terms, as the historian Wolfgang Behringer has recently averred, somewhat provocatively, the increase in speed between 1615 and 1820 was greater than the increase between 1820 and the modern day. In the early years of the 19th century, in which both Schubert and Miller reached maturity, passenger-carrying postal services were the wave of the future. Contemporaries spoke of the entirely new life which had been given to the vehicular post in Germany. The road network was expanded, and surfaces improved hand in hand with developments in carriage suspension, which gave passengers the feeling that they were gliding along. Lengths of stops at post stations were cut down. Conductors, using clock and logbook, ensured that advertised times were adhered to. Penalties for slacking expressed no longer in hours or quarter hours, but in minutes. Journey times were slashed. Berlin to Magdeburg from 2.5 days to 15 hours. Frankfurt was now only 2.5 days distant from Berlin, and 93 rapid post vehicles made the journey every week in the 1830s. The whole system, relentless in its demands for punctuality, speed and efficiency, robbed travel of a leisureliness which it would never again regain. "The new way of travelling was nothing short of a horror," wrote one observer in 1840. "The tyrannical punctuality, which may be of advantage to the generality, is a torment to the individual." Journeying from Berlin to Hamburg in 1830, one passenger, Thérèse de Vrien, felt like a piece of merchandise robbed of her sight and hearing. The confrontation between Schubert's alienated wanderer and this contraption of commercial society has a brilliant dramatic intensity about it. The two very different sorts of horn call, that from the forest of memory and that of the mail coach careering down the road, underline his outcast state. Disappointment will ensue. His heart leaps up because the mail coach comes from town, where his lost love lives, so he tells us. But it also palpitates because the post horn is a sign for the mail coach, and the mail coach means letters, and all the emotions of receipt are set in train. We hear all this in the vocal line as it rises to a high A flat. It is the oxytocin rush that modern researchers have identified with the use of social media and electronic messaging services. A love affair conducted by instantaneous text message, with that much anticipated buzz or ringtone as the message arrives, has the same hormonal surges but a very different texture and rhythm from one mediated by the postman. Mein Herz, mein Herz. If the little quizzical gap in the punchline of the first verse can read as real puzzlement, "The post doesn't bring any letters for you," the nun ja in the second verse, "Of course, how could I forget the post comes from town," is a moment of recognition but also of self-mockery. She has been out of his thoughts more and more, as he had feared from the outset. Now, this sudden reminder. Will he go back and spy on her, stalk her a little more? The tone of the verse and of the music suggests that he is beyond all that and sets the scene for the remainder of the cycle in which the visionary and the existential trump the emotional and the everyday. Song 14, Der Greise Kopf, The Old Man's Head.
Der Reif hat einen weißen Schein, mir übers Haar gestreut.
The frost had scattered a seeming whiteness over my hair, so I believed I'd become an old man, and I rejoiced greatly. But soon it melted away and I had black hair again, such that I shuddered at my youth. How far still till I reach the funeral bier? From red of dusk to light of dawn, many a head has become old. Who'd believe it? And mine hasn't achieved that on this whole journey. Up to this point in the journey, much of the tension has been between the past and the present. between revisiting the past, picking at the psychic wound, and trying to move forward in a hostile environment. What we have now is a brute, bleak confrontation with the emptiness of life. We have all had that moment of catching ourselves in a mirror and seeing ourselves as others see us, older, fatter, thinner, distracted, dismayed, but above all, other. The idea here is first cousin to such an epiphany. The wanderer sees himself as an old man because the frost has turned his hair white. All this is bathed in the irony of which Miller is such a master and his wanderer such an adept. How does the protagonist see himself thus transmogrified? There's no mirror out here, and the rivers, the ponds, the puddles are frozen. The central conceit is not out of the question. We are quite accustomed to pictures of polar explorers transformed into ancient seers by ice crystals. But the wanderer, and this is one of his great virtues as the cycle moves into its bleaker regions, typically clothes his distress in absurdity, an absurdity which gives the cycle its Beckettian resonances. It's all a bit of a joke, if at the same time a tragic one. The music explores the spaces which open up beneath the irony. I'm not educated in the finer points of harmony and counterpoint, but if from the very outset Der Greise Kopf, the old man's head, seems to be a new adventure in alienation and distress, it is because of the crazily stretched, effortful singing line in the piano and the underlying uncomfortable harmony. To turn suddenly into an old man should be the stuff of horrible nightmares. That's what we hear at the beginning. But for the wanderer, it is accepted casually, as a not unexpected gift. After all, has he not suffered enough on his journey to deserve the hastening of his physical decline? And wouldn't the shortening of such a painful lifespan be oh so welcome? Even the repeated words, "How far to the grave," have an unexpected effect in performance. Expressed for the first time, they are charged with their primary meaning, "I wish death were closer." The second time, more meditative, looking at the listeners in front of you, the secondary meaning acquires force. Death will come when it will come, perhaps sooner than you think. When do you think you'll be dying? Is the thought, eyeballing the spectator. A moment of extraordinary etiquette-shattering intimacy. The wanderer's longing for death is not a simple one. It coexists in him, as it does in us all, with fear of that consummation. As he wrote this song, Schubert's syphilitic predicament would surely have made these words all too ambiguous. Wir glaubt und meine wart es nicht auf dieser ganzen Reise, auf dieser ganzen Reise.
Ian Bostridge, reading and performing Schubert's Winter Journey. The pianist is Leif Uwe Ansnes. The book is abridged by Lawrence Waring and produced by Kirstine Cameron. Tonight's Front Row continues its look back over the last 12 months. Here's John Wilson with the details.
Join me for the second part of our review of the cultural highlights of 2014 in the company of, among others, Benedict Cumberbatch, Emma Thompson and Sam Smith.
It's been an incredible year and I can't quite believe it. You know, it's kind of odd to think of how much has happened.
Is that the world you want to create? Well, then go with it. If it isn't, fight it. Be revolutionary.
We know this is a brilliant man we're watching. And my job is more about trying to humanise him in a way that's relatable to me and hopefully then to an audience.
Front Row with me, John Wilson, on Radio 4 this evening at 7.15.
The news is next this morning and then Woman's Hour asks, has woman sport finally come of age?